I want to welcome you to the second biannual Boulder Progressive Candidate Forum. We really appreciate a lot of our city council candidates coming out tonight. So this forum is being co-hosted by five different organizations, and we are each going to take about a minute to introduce ourselves to you. We've collaboratively come up with these questions that are going to be asked of the candidates tonight, and we're also going to have about a half hour at the end for audience questions. My name is Elena Wilson. I'm with the Boulder Community Housing Association. We are a network of both legal and underground housing cooperatives. Our members include some of the co-housing units and other individuals in the community who are interested in sharing. And one of the big things that we do is organize food purchases collectively. In 2014, we bought about $100,000 worth of food together. We also organize kind of trainings and workshops on nonviolent communication, meeting facilitation, and do a lot of education and outreach, and we're really excited to be a part of the forum today. I'm going to pass it over to Brenda Lyle of the Family Learning Center.
Hi, my name is Brenda Lyle. I'm the executive director for the Family Learning Center, and we focus on primarily low-income and moderate-income issues of inclusion and diversity in education and family development throughout Boulder County. Specifically, we're located in the city of Boulder. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Darren O'Connor. I'm with Boulder Rights Watch. And our vision is a city that leads by example in recognizing the value of all community members, including our unhoused neighbors. We endeavor to tap the capabilities, talents, and experiences of Boulder's housed and unhoused citizens to creatively and lovingly address the needs of those living without a permanent place to call home. Throughout the process, our city will acknowledge and respect the rights of everyone that collectively calls Boulder home. I just want to share briefly with you that in 2014, in August, prior to council's study session on the 10-year plan to end homelessness, we produced an action plan to address homeless issues in Boulder. There were six issues: establish a daytime storage center for use of the homeless community members. Number two is create a year-round comprehensive day center. Three was address the issue of housing for our poorest community members. Four was create year-round homeless shelter capacity. Five was implement a public education campaign. And six was develop a community response teams that could replace or assist police in showing up in a more caring manner. So look forward to hearing from you all tonight.
Hi, everyone. My name is Neil DiMuccio, and I'm here with Boulder Surge, as well as Jez. We're about a nine-month new organization. We're a local chapter of a national organization. Surge stands for Showing Up for Racial Justice. The mission of our organization is to educate and organize white people to be present to issues that are facing people of color. And so we are acting up and organizing locally and kind of regionally with Denver for social action and political action to make Boulder and Denver a place that's more livable, inclusive, affordable, and just for people of color and for white people, because we think that by doing this work, we'll create equity and equality.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Bean, and actually wearing two hats tonight. One is a member of the First Congregational Church, so I'd like to, without being too evangelical, just welcome you. And I'll have to tell you, actually, just as much as I love what happens in the sanctuary, I'm a member of the choir, and the liturgy's great, and it's an open and affirming church. The real fun act is in meetings like this tonight. My other role is being a member of BCAR, the Boulder Coalition and Alliance on Race. We practice nonviolent communication, critical thinking, learning, and most importantly, activism. We meet the first Monday and the second Tuesday of every month here at the church. Again, welcome.
Thank you all, and thanks again to the candidates for being here. Our forum tonight is the same time as the city council meeting, so there are two incumbents who are running for re-election who responded to our nine questions that they received in advance, and you can read their responses from Tim Plass and Zan Jones at the back. They're available at the table, so please check those out. Yeah, and Bill Regler will send responses, and we'll have these all posted on the forum website at bocha-neighbors.org.
I'm Kelly. I work at a local nonprofit here in Boulder, and I also grew up here, so I'm super stoked to be a part of this process. So basically, we have about nine questions here that we're hoping to get through. We'll read off the question. People will raise their hand, and as they raise their hand, we'll write down your names. Each person will have up to a minute to speak.
So hi, everyone. I'm also moderating tonight. My name is Alicia Conti, and I work for a local nonprofit based out of Longmont.
Hi, I'm Don Cody. Evening, I'm Jan Burton.
Julie McCabe.
I'm Bob Yates.
Ed Jabari.
Comrade Keith Percy.
Cha-Cha Spinrad.
Aaron Brockett.
Jyotsna Raj.
Michael Krutek.
Awesome, thank you so much. Alicia will begin with the first question.
So the first question has to do with housing the unhoused. Boulder's 10-year plan to end homelessness has become the 10-year plan to address homelessness. And while the intentions of the city and volunteers involved in this effort are good, by the city's own admission, our community is far from solving the problem. With the ongoing rise in Boulder's cost of housing, more people may be at risk of losing access to housing for economic reasons. Unfortunately, there are often barriers to assistance. If a family wants help from organizations like EFA, there can be minimum income requirements, leaving many families without options. So this is the question. Imagine that a group of advocates has identified an existing building which could be repurposed as a rooming house providing housing, food, and utilities for families at $750 a month without violating any of the city's health and safety codes. However, the property would run afoul of existing occupancy limits and minimum parking requirements. At a public meeting to discuss this potential solution, both nearby residents and unhoused families who would benefit from the project speak in favor of it. How would you proceed?
Don Cody, and I think the people who were putting this proposal together were really making their sense. They did their homework. They got the people involved to be there at the meeting and to agree on it. So from the council standpoint, what I would do obviously is propose an exemption in their case and speak in favor of it to try and get it moving along.
Jan Burton.
So it sounds like everyone supports this. I think that I would ask the staff to do some further analysis to just verify the costs and other pros and cons that would come up from anyone other than these two groups. But it looks like it would be a very good potential solution.
Julie McCabe.
So I'm in favor of reexamining occupancy limits in the city of Boulder. And to me, this would be a prime example of a place that those should be reexamined. And secondly, I've been running consistently on a transportation platform. My proposal would include buying local urban service, which would give the city of Boulder free transportation on RTD buses. The reason why I think this is a good idea is because I favor density, but not increased cars. I think if these properties are going to come in with increased density, that they must have a solution that does not include parking.
This is Bob Yates. I'm already on record for increasing occupancy limits, not just in the hypothetical we're talking about, but across the city. I think that we need to really look at this kind of silly rule we have about 3 to 4 people per house. I don't really quite understand the origin of that, the need for that, the basis for that. And so I would actually not only grant a waiver or permission for this particular house in the hypothetical, I would actually like to see this across the city.
I'm Ed Jabari. I'm adamantly opposed to the current occupancy limits, and I've spoken publicly at City Council on that. I find them discriminatory against several demographic groups, and they're most likely unconstitutional. The question doesn't really indicate if the project is funded or whether or how many cars there would be. So those are important details to really answering this question. But under the current rules, I'd advocate for a transparent and inclusive public process and using several forms of outreach and clearly present both the potential impacts and benefits of the project. And if it has great support, advocate proceeding and fast-tracking through the zoning and exemptions that would need to happen for that. If I'd propose limiting the number of vehicles to one per family in this hypothetical case, and if there's significant opposition, I'd look at the issues, look for solutions, and challenge the developers to make it acceptable to the neighborhood.
Comrade Keith Percy.
When the problem is parking over people, we have to favor people. And especially if those people are unhoused and trying to become housed. Our occupancy limits in Boulder don't do that. Very often we have very large houses that could easily fit more than 3 or 4 unrelated people that just don't because they're not allowed to, or they do it illegally, and then they have the risk of wondering if they're safe in their own community, and if they do have a community or if their neighbors are going to get them in trouble at the first sign of disagreement. So this is a situation where we need to smash the occupancy limit. It doesn't work, and we need to behave like adults and do what works as adults. And we can all do that together without, you know, saying it must be 4. And in that case, we move it along.
Cha-cha spin round.
So I hope that this wouldn't happen because I hope to, like Keith was saying, smash the occupancy limits. I would like to remove the occupancy limits, and I would like to remove parking restrictions that make it difficult for developers to make environmentally friendly projects and projects for people without cars. Provided that we haven't gotten that far yet, I would do whatever I can to grant an exemption to this project and to get transportation staff to think about what they can do as far as parking, if parking became an issue, which it might not. I wouldn't think it would be.
Aaron Brockett here. This is exactly the kind of housing solution that we need in the city. You know, housing prices are getting extraordinarily high. It's very difficult for the young people and families to stay in town. And we need to look at solutions like this and like co-ops, which I think are a phenomenal solution for people to live together in community, you know, with low housing costs. Personally, I live in Wild Sage co-housing in the north part of town, which is a little bit less intense form of community, but also a form of intentional community. It's a wonderful way to live. So I'd really like us to see us adjust our fundamental regulations to make things like this much easier to do. But this particular hypothetical is a nice softball question because you got the neighbors engaged and in favor of it. So absolutely, we should allow things like this. And then if there are potential impacts, we should just regulate on the impacts, not on the housing itself. We should make this kind of stuff easy.
Jyotsna Raj.
Well, for me, the operative thing in this is that the neighbors are in agreement with the people who want to live in this situation. And I think this is exactly the kind of engagement I would like. Engage the neighbors, see what they find acceptable, and allow these kind of housing solutions to emerge for people who are unhoused. I do think we should look at the transportation impacts and see to it that there are not too many cars, and providing easy access to transportation is a good thing for everybody in the community. I myself grew up in India in what is called an extended family situation. We call it a joint family in India. And I can tell you it has enormous advantages to everyone. My mother could go back to work because my grandmother and my aunt were at home to look after me. So I see this as a good thing.
Michael Krutek, I think the hypothetical aside, I've already come out in support of occupancy limit increases. I just think they're a good thing, whether it happens to be for seniors, whether it happens to be for young folks, whether it happens to be for unhoused people. I think it's a good solution.
Hey, I'm Jared. Ideally, we really need to destroy the occupancy limit law that's going on in this city. I mean, if we want to encourage growth, we need to encourage growth. I don't know, it's a crazy idea, but the way we're going to do this is to start with occupancy limits and go from there. And I know a lot of people are really concerned with parking limitations and things like that, but believe it or not everyone owns a car. And when you put so many people in one house, they tend to carpool and do crazy things like that, and you know, go to the grocery store together and actually work as a community within a community. So really the first thing we need to do is get rid of the occupancy limits that we have.
Jan Burton.
I just want to clarify my response because I was reading about the 10-year plan to end homelessness. I definitely agree with what everyone has said about co-housing. I am a big supporter of co-housing, and I think we should change our zoning for that.
Ed Jabari.
Well, I think the question basically said the supporters of this project came out and some of the neighbors were out too, but it wasn't really robust and inclusive, at least in the question public input process. So, you know, I definitely want to see that before doing anything with it. There could be a lot of people opposing that weren't even aware of what's going on.
Jyotsna Raj.
I would like to make it clear that I'm not saying get rid of occupancy limits altogether. We need to engage any neighborhood in this discussion. And if this seems like a viable option for them, I think it can be a viable option for all the people involved.
This question is on the camping ban. The Department of Justice recently submitted a legal brief in Boise, Idaho case that stated that camping bans like Boulder's, as well as other anti-vagrancy and quality of life laws, which criminalize activities such as sleeping that are a necessary part of being human, are a violation of the Eighth Amendment's cruel and unusual punishment clause. City Attorney Tom Carr recently stated that Boulder should not be concerned with the DOJ's position because it will take years for the issue to reach the U.S. Supreme Court, and any action taken with respect to Boise's ordinance will have no effect on Boulder until the Supreme Court issues a decision. In addition, he recently stated that his office loses approximately half of the camping cases that they take to trial, although his office persists in enforcing the no camping ordinance. What is your opinion of the city's camping ban, and if you're not happy with it, what steps would you propose to deal with the issue?
Comrade Keith Percy.
So the Department of Justice is absolutely right that it's inhumane. It violates human rights. It violates basic dignity. The city attorney is absolutely wrong when he says we can sit on our hands and wait for people to suffer and wait for the Supreme Court to notice. I've worked with the DOJ in disability rights, and I'll tell you, by the time they know there's a problem, there's a big problem. And we've had people freeze to death, so we've got a big problem, and there's no time to wait. We need to immediately overhaul the camping ban. We need to set up homeless Bill of Rights. We need to have some place for people to go. And we need to understand that the police are not going to be people's first choice when they're vulnerable, when they're poor, when they're homeless, when they're hungry. So punishment, punitiveness, is not going to be people's first choice, and we need to look at that.
Cha-Cha Spinrad.
So I'm completely against the camping ban. I think that Keith was right on with all the reasons to be against it. In addition, I think that Boulder needs to go beyond just repealing the camping ban and actually passing the right to rest to give people without housing the basic rights that they need to live, to be able to eat and sleep in public.
Julie McCabe.
So I have to stand on this. I live in the 500 block of Arapahoe, and many of the homeless are my neighbors. My husband and I debate this, but I call them my neighbors. Having said this, on the south side of the creek between 6th and 9th Street Bridge, on many occasions, there are extreme hobo camps. These hobo camps are not appropriate. They take open space that we paid for, and they turn it into trash dumps. It is awful to see our police, which currently are the people dealing with the problem, probably 60,000 a year employees out cleaning up after people who are basically addicted and alcoholic and cannot get into homeless shelters. There has to be a different solution than this, and it is certainly not to turn the central area of Boulder into a hobo camp. I was one of the first to start sending photos to council of pictures of what that Central Park area looked like, which was denuded, filled with cigarette butts, and trash. That is not the way to save Boulder. I agree with Cha-Cha, and I agree with Keith.
Ed Jabari.
I oppose the camping ban. As I understand it, currently people can sleep outside, but if they have any kind of sleeping bag or blanket, they can be prosecuted at that point. That's a health and safety issue. There should be no doubt about that part of it. I think I could support limitations on camping, but only if we had enough shelters and even open spaces where we're designated that are accessible to people to be able to sleep outside as well. That would be the only case I would support it. And I don't want to see people suffering unduly because other people want to ignore the problem of homelessness. I'd like to look at all of our anti-vagrancy related ordinances and make sure they're not discriminating and propose that we have no enforcement without a solution. And I'm also a proponent of making the city attorney's position an elected position.
Jyotsna Raj.
I think it is cruel to expect people on a really cold winter night not even to have a blanket or a comforter to shelter themselves. So I do not approve of this at all. We should provide housing or at least shelter for people on the coldest nights of the year. I was one of the founding board members of Boho, which does exactly that, that it opens up places of worship, like perhaps this church participates in it as well, that opens up places of worship for homeless people on the coldest nights so that they will not freeze out on the streets and will not be persecuted for that either. And these people are accepted regardless of whether they are drunk or on drugs or whatever, because it doesn't matter how your condition is, you're going to freeze and die if you're going to be exposed to the elements. So I do not support this kind of punitive action against homeless people, but nevertheless, we should not use Central Boulder as a place where they go because they have no other recourse.
Hi, Jan Burton. I do not support punitive action on homeless people. I think they are in a situation they don't want to be in, and I don't think that's a compassionate way to do it, and Boulder is better than that. We should make it a high priority to find or create housing, some sort of housing or shelter for the homeless. and especially the ones that are from here. I've been told that the police know the names of 300 homeless here who are from here, and we should be trying to help solve their problems, and it should be a very high priority.
Aaron Brockett, not to repeat what I agree with people that have already said, but I think it's certainly cruel and unusual to essentially criminalize being human. So I think it's, you know, that's a law that has to change in town. To me, the answer to these questions is providing services. It's not about enforcing inhumane laws. So I think it's critical that we get the homeless organizations in town, the Bridge House, the Shelter, and Boho, to work together and coordinate their services such that we make sure that there's always a safe, dry place for folks when things are cold outside. So I think if we always have that place, then we could work with a task force or a citizens action group like has been discussed, to make sure that people have a safe place to go and that we get folks who need the services into the services rather than attempting to ticket them.
Don Cody.
I just wanted to say a couple things about we don't have to wait for the Supreme Court to act. We need to be looking at our own moral compass as to what we do, and I don't think it's right to criminalize the acts that are occurring there. And I know we probably all feel the same about finding shelter in the winter, but many of these people are going to be outside in the summer as well, and we need to look at setting aside areas somewhere that they can find a home.
Again, my name is Bob Yates. I actually got to know several of the unhoused people in the community. My office is actually right across the street from this building, and so I come over here to Bridge House from time to time at lunch hour and get to know some of the folks that are here long-term, some of the folks that are passing through, and each one of them has a human story. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, we've made a little progress in the last year or two with the three organizations that Aaron mentioned coming together, but I think that, we were at a 2 when we moved to about a 3 or 4. We have a long, long ways to go, both for housing people and structures. And for those who like to camp, I used to be chairman of the Parks Board. We have 91 parks in this town, 91 parks. Perhaps we could take one or two of them and set them aside as a campground for those who want to camp.
Michael Krutek, so I'm not supportive of the camping ban. I actually think that the enforcement is counterproductive. My understanding of what happens is that the homeless get arrested, they get their goods taken, their sleeping bags and all of their products taken from them, and then they are released because they can't be held because they're not going to be prosecuted. And so what we end up with is somebody who's now out on the street without the things that they had previously to go ahead and protect themselves. They also have, if they've been found guilty, then they end up with a misdemeanor because they can't pay the ticket. And so then if they are actually not addicted or not to substances, then they can't get jobs because they've got a misdemeanor against them. So I think that the whole cycle is a very counterproductive cycle that we're working with, and it needs to be fixed.
Jared Kasuba.
We definitely need to get rid of the camping ban. I mean, this is an ordinance that punishes people who have already been punished enough. Setting up a campsite is great, but we should set up more than just one campsite and allow for, people to hang in the public parks that we pay for in the first place. With that aside, we do need to put more money into our social services for the homeless and just for, people that are less fortunate than a lot of people in Boulder. And we need to do this by, looking at other things like psychological things, not just, the transition from being homeless to not being homeless is not an easy path. And some people like have a harder struggle than others. And, with addiction in mind and with all these other things, we need to be helping people, not like hurting people. We need to be setting an example for the rest of the United States, not waiting for the problem to reach here. Like Comrade Keith and a few others have pointed out, waiting for the problem to reach here is going to create a bigger problem in the end.
All right, so the next question has to do with welcoming minorities and immigrants in our community. So the Knight Foundation's recent Soul of the Community study looked at community in Boulder and found that a majority of residents did not feel attached to others in the city. It also found that minorities and immigrants do not feel that they are welcome here as an integral part of the broader community. People of color have also shared with BCAR that they experience racism spanning from microaggressions to overt racial slurs in Boulder. Additionally, the city has no policy to encourage hiring people of non-white race and of Latino and other ethnicities. the racial and ethnic makeup of our city have changed little over time. Please outline three options which you believe could address these feelings of exclusion, ensure that more residents have a stronger attachment to our city, and make minorities and immigrants feel that they are more valued members of our community.
Again, Bob Yates. I do a lot of volunteer work, and one of the things that fills me up most is a program that I participated in through the YWCA called Reading to End Racism. And it's a really cool program. We go out to schools, K through about five or six, and we sit down with kids. I was just with first graders on Thursday. We read to them stories that reflect racism or conflict between races. And it's so satisfying to teach children about being allies, about standing up for people that are unlike them. You know, as a straight, Christian, middle-aged, white male, it's hard for me to understand sometimes the hurt that is imposed by racism. And so racism oftentimes is caused by ignorance and not hatred. You know, hatred is a glass full of poison. Ignorance is an empty glass. And for people like me, it's very important for us to understand the hurt that's caused by racism. And this is about education and about sharing. Thank you.
Ed Jabari, yeah, I've lived in several other countries and been the foreigner who doesn't speak the language. I've had to learn about other cultures and how to communicate with people that way, and have experienced racism or discrimination as well as some welcoming cultures. So I know sort of how that works. First of all, I'd like to propose that the city joins dozens of other communities in calling Columbus Day Indigenous Peoples Day now. So that was yesterday. I would like to review our city policies and ordinances and the enforcement data with minority groups and meaningful address any institutional racism or classism that seems to be in those. I'd champion affordability, which we'll get into some of those issues, repealing or revising the occupancy, removing or protecting the mobile home parks and supporting co-ops to make it a lot more affordable for everyone to live here. But the biggest piece of this is advocating for culture projects like my own project in North Boulder called The Secret Garden, where we welcome everybody, we have events where everybody's included, and we celebrate diversity.
Comrade Keith Percy.
I'll go and I'll try to answer the question as it was asked. The first thing we can do of our three things is actually listen to the people of color, hear what their experiences are, and then we can begin to say, what do we need to change as a community in order to be more welcoming? A second thing we could do is that we have five times the arrest rate of people of color in Boulder as white people, where white people are more than 80% of the population, so that's a huge problem. And recently the police chief said, you have to understand that those are just outsiders, people of color passing through. And so when we have that attitude in front of the Human Rights Commission, voiced by the police chief, that's a huge issue. We need to really look at how the police are trained, how the city is trained, and really increase our knowledge, increase our understanding. The third thing is that we can take the culture we do have and highlight it and bring it into the community and celebrate it not only on special days, but every day.
Cha-Cha Spinrad.
We have aversive racism happening. We have inadvertent biases that are internalized being expressed. And people don't mean to be racist. So we need, first and foremost, to have ongoing trainings for staff, including police officers, to cover social justice issues and issues affecting minority groups. That was in the question. So that's the most important thing. They need to be ongoing so that we are always aware and always working on ourselves. The second thing we need to do is create more opportunities for community. We need to allow people to live cooperatively. Beyond that, we need to have discussions, like BCAR has awesome discussions. I'm almost out of time. So also having interpreters and material in other languages is really important.
Hello, Aaron Brockett here. Well, I mean, I have to confess that I'm someone sort of steeped in privilege here as a white, male, straight, cis person born into a middle-class family. I don't have all the answers here. And there are a lot of people in town like me. And I think the key here is on an individual basis is just being open to the perspectives of others and trying to actively listen and strive to make things better. So I went to a meeting of Surge a couple of months ago and was incredibly impressed by the work that I saw people doing there in terms of examining their own prejudices and thinking about how we can be kind of white allies for people of color to make sure that we are a welcoming and inclusive community. So I think efforts like that need to be encouraged as much as possible. You know, I'll also mention, you know, housing I think is critical, that, you know, we have a lack of types of housing for living in community, and housing prices are too high. So I think working on allowing for multi-generational and community housing would help with these issues as well.
Jyotsna Raj.
Well, what a surprise. I actually am an immigrant, and my immigrant experience technically was a very easy one, but I can understand the emotional difficulties we all face when we leave our culture, we leave our family, we leave our country, and come to a strange place. I had the added advantage of actually knowing English, but I would appreciate our immigrant communities being welcomed in their own languages in Boulder. That would be a big help to help them feel welcome in our community. Most of all these immigrant communities usually have leaders, and we should encourage these leaders to enter the city processes and become advocates for their communities within our culture. And the most important thing is all ethnic communities, and in fact many other minorities, have very vibrant cultures, and they have many cultural celebrations. Let's enjoy those celebrations at all times in Boulder, not just once a year on one special day. And I think that would go a long way to explaining them to us and us to them.
Michael Krutek.
So three things that we can do are, one, try to go ahead and elect 6 of 9 council members by district as opposed to everybody at large. I think that will make council members more in tune with the fabric of their communities and responsible to the constituents that they've got. We need to encourage the minority populations of the city to go ahead and participate in boards and commissions, and we need to try and figure out how that can raise all the way up to the city council level, because we don't have any kind of representation at the top, and so when you don't have anything at the top, you don't get responses down at the bottom.
Jared Kasuba.
No one here is born a racist. There's no such thing. Racism starts from the ground up, and seriously, one of the biggest things we could be doing is after school programs and even during school programs, where there's like a little more of teaching, a little diversity and stuff like that, because otherwise our, you know, kids aren't going to be exposed to anything until, you know, they're confronted with possibly racism dead on. With that said, another couple other things I would do is include cultural events in our farmers market. Every week we should be having different cultural events, using the band shell. I mean, that thing just sits there. Another thing we could be doing is have stricter punishments for, you know, hate crimes. And I was glad to be part of a precedent here in Boulder where words can be defined as a hate crime now. And you know, words can be more hurtful than acts sometimes. And people don't understand that. And I'm glad that there's stricter punishment for that now.
Hi, Don again. Yeah, I think we are an elitist community here. There's not getting around it. But there are things we can do is to make sure that it's more inclusive. When we look at a city council that acts like a monolith, we know that not all the community is involved in that. And doing it by districts would be a way to broaden that appeal and a way to get other people involved who don't have the time or energy or monies to be able to run for it. I've suggested in the past that we look at having a shared seat on the council that two people, just like a job share, could use and would have opportunities to get different points of view on the council at different times and get that feeling out to the people.
Chamberton. I agree it's an educational issue for many people. So I think I liked Keith's idea of getting the input from diverse audiences about what is wrong and what we need to do to improve. But then there needs to be a lot of cultural awareness and education. And that could be done through nonprofits. Certainly it should be done at the city. Secondly, we need to increase our hiring and recruitment of diverse people throughout the city. So one thing that should be done to start that is working with our universities, CU and Naropa. They need to offer more scholarships. And once we get people to university, then hopefully they will stay. And then we need to make a high priority as a city to hire some of the leaders from diverse candidates and encourage our nonprofits to do the same.
So Julie McCabe. So I'm currently working as a substitute school teacher in the Boulder Valley School District, and I've taught at most schools. And I would guarantee you, the students under 10 years old are very diverse, and you cannot lay the line at Hispanics, Blacks, Asian. It's all over the board. And these kids are all growing up together with a very different sense of race than what we're talking about tonight. Secondly, there are suggestions now to get council out of council chambers, to develop interactive websites in different languages. And I know the Hispanic community, which I think is about 8 or 10% of the current population, they're just not visible down on the Boulder Creek Mall. That they're ready to step up. It's just that you can't go to council meetings that last all night, and you need to get council out of chambers and into the community, because those people want to be involved, and I've talked to them, and I know they do.
So this question is on racial discrimination in policing. So USA Today found that Boulder police have the second worst record in Colorado in terms of disproportionate rates of arrest for African Americans. It's also been our experience that certain groups feel more threatened than served by local law enforcement, including unhoused Latinos, Blacks, and Muslims. They complain of profiling and selective law enforcement, leading to tension between Boulder's police force and minority groups. However, Boulder police tell us that when they receive complaints from citizens, such as someone reporting suspicious activity, they have no choice but to respond. Unfortunately, the white majority in Boulder has a tendency to see people of color as suspicious, resulting in unnecessary police calls that also make people of color feel unfairly targeted by police. Would you support a civilian board overseeing the police in order to address complaints related to these and other issues? Why or why not?
Don Cody.
You know, I didn't know, and I'm not trying to be funny here, I didn't know we had enough minorities to be statistically significant for a poll for USA Today. Now, I think that's a problem that we don't have them. And I don't see Boulder being in that state yet, but I do think discrimination is something you really have to stay ahead of. You have to not only be aware of it, that it's there, you have to speak up when you see it. You have to take time and tell people, I don't agree with that.
Jan Burton, I would definitely support a civilian board to oversee the police to address the complaints. I think it's a great idea, and I think people from organizations in this room would be a great start for that commission.
Julie McCabe.
So I too agree with the civilian board, but more importantly, I think it was about 2 years ago there was a study session involving whether we would hire more police in order to help with the downtown issue, and that was a decision by city council at that time. And I don't think the answer is more police. I know the county jail is under extreme pressure right now, and I think that it's about time that we begin to see it as the social question that it is and not strictly a policing one.
Bob Yates.
We actually already have a civilian police oversight board. It's called the Boulder City Council. And if you don't like the way they've been doing their job the last few years, you can pick five of us up here and we'll do it better.
Ed Jabari.
I would support an oversight board. I'd like to see that comprised of all people of color, maybe not even any white people on there. But I would also like to require a comprehensive sensitivity training that's also ongoing, as Chacha mentioned, for officers so they can understand what behavior is acceptable and not acceptable. Maybe they don't even know, give them the benefit of the doubt there. There seems to be a lack of accountability, as a lot of us have pointed out here, with respect to institutional racism and classism. And lots of our current policies and ordinances discriminate against the homeless and people of color, as we've gone through law enforcement statistics and other information. Videos that we've seen at council show that homeless and people of color are targeted and treated much differently than white people. The civilian board should have resources to encourage and reward the compassionate behavior if there are cases of that, as well as consequences, including loss of employment, if they don't abide.
Comrade Keith Percy.
Not only must it be supported, it absolutely is necessary for the community to take charge of it. Otherwise, you have the police investigating the police, and as we've seen in the last few years, that doesn't go very well. And a lot of people end up, you know, susceptible to police violence. A lot of people end up killed. And I myself have had the police walk in unannounced this year as a poor disabled activist, I've also had to leave my house in order not to encounter the police because my partner was having a panic attack and the center didn't know what to do except call the police. And so it's not only a matter of the police, but it's a matter of, are we going to stand up and create the community that can confront the problems of the police? Because otherwise we have this issue that we've encountered from the Denver Post, where Colorado is a state that catches renegade cops, cops that have trouble in other departments, come here and, you know, continue to be very bad cops because the community doesn't do anything about it. So the answer is community.
Cha-Cha Spinrad.
So in August, there was a community discussion hosted by BCAR right here, and the outcome of that was that, yes, this is what people want. Police are not very well educated on issues of racial justice or economic justice, and they're not really set up to respond in an unbiased manner. And so we really need to have the sensitivity trainings, like Ed was talking about, and like I was talking about last question. And then on top of that, we need to be able to have a civilian oversight board who can ensure that police respond in correct ways. And if they don't respond in very good ways, then we need a restorative justice program for that as well, to hold the police accountable.
Aaron Brockett.
Yes, I certainly would support the civilian oversight board for the police. I think it's important to have civilian checks on police behavior. Of course, over the last year, we've seen, you know, incredibly horrific reports of police misbehavior. We have to make sure that if anything like that happens here in this town, we have the ability to have good and solid oversight from the civilian community. I think we also need to change how we respond to complaints, like the question mentioned. You know, if someone is essentially called in for walking while black, you know, after the officer looks into the situation, there should be feedback that goes back to the person who called it in to say, look, here's what the situation was. There was no problem. We need to reevaluate why you're calling this in. So have some kind of feedback loop on those kinds of complaints as well to make sure that the people of color in this community can walk in our town and feel safe.
Jyotsna Raj.
I absolutely would support a civilian oversight board because, of course, the police cannot police themselves. And we have seen nationwide how people have behaved towards people of color. I'm dismayed to hear that the situation is not very good in Boulder, but at least we have not had deaths here yet. And I do not want to see that ever happen. So I believe sensitivity training is a must for the police. They need to know how to handle situations or people who look unlike them, people who they may suspect of doing something wrong simply because they're of another race or another color. And beyond that, if they do persist in behaving like that, they should be held accountable. Because without that, these behaviors will never change.
Michael Krutek, the first line of defense here, I think, is the behavior expectations, the hiring practices, and the tone set by the chief of police and the expectations that are established for that particular person. And the oversight committee, I know a lot of large cities have these oversight committees, and I guess I'm falling in the middle place right now between an oversight committee and what Bob was stating, is that perhaps that's the role of the city council in a city this size. If that's not the case and we are too large for that kind of a practice for the city council, then I think we need to look for an oversight committee. I think it's important for an oversight committee to be objective in its perspective, and it's got to be a broad-based type of community organization. It can't just be people who want to vilify the police. And so I think it's very important that we have a balanced approach to whatever kind of a committee we establish.
Jared Kasuba.
I definitely support a civilian board overseeing the police. It's rather important to have that interaction between the police and the people they're supposed to be serving. I think with the hiring practices, as Mike said, there needs to be more like of a psychological background checks as well when we do hire our police force. They do have a tendency to hire a lot of vets, which I do support. But at the same time, they come back with PTSD and a lot of Islamophobia and a lot of other racism that they didn't have before, and they need to be trained back into society before they can serve the people. And I think this is an important key into, you know, getting the police to be on board with the civilians it's supposed to serve.